Sports Bettors, Circa Sports now presents Palm Saturdays with Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm. Live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Here on 104.3 The Score. And watch live on YouTube and Twitch. Featuring the latest and the greatest of the sports betting landscape from coast to coast, along with some great guests. Here he is, Mike Palm.
Good morning, Chicago. It is Palm Saturdays, live from the D in downtown Las Vegas, presented to you by Circa Sports, and great to be with you on another Saturday morning. Happy Valentine's Day to all those young and old lovers, wherever you are. It is indeed a strange weekend in sports and in sports wagering. Some have called this the worst weekend of the year. Football has ended. The NBA is on an all-star break, which no one has cared about for a few years, maybe outside of the three-point contest. And you don't have a full NHL slate as well because, of course, over there in Italy, they are playing the Olympics, although the men and women's hockey are both in full gear, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. So basically, we've got college basketball on display here this weekend. There's a PGA stop at Pebble Beach, which is quite interesting, and I expect the handle to be up on that. But a big Saturday of college basketball, and joining us in about 20 minutes will be Amal Shaw. Amal Shaw is a professional sports bettor and poker player and a very adept college basketball handicapper, and we'll get his thoughts on the card today, as well as Indiana at Illinois tomorrow, as the Illini hope to break that two-game losing streak. Two brutal losses in overtime last weekend at Michigan State, and then earlier in the week at home to Wisconsin, who's playing as well as anyone. Well, let's recap the Super Bowl. Just a week ago, we had Super Bowl 60 in Northern California. The Seahawks closed a 4.5-point favorite over the Patriots with a total of 45.5. And the favorite in the under gets there. Seahawks 29, Patriots 13. We'll start the show recapping how we did. Remember, we discussed our picks, or I did at least, last week. And we ended up going 6-3 on the game. The main bet, the under, 45.5 cashed. We got a little bit lucky in that we had to have a holding call on a Kenneth Walker touchdown late in the game to keep the game under. Amazing. The game was 12-0 going into the fourth quarter. And they scored 30 points in the fourth, and we had to hang on for the under. The theory about Seattle and taking points and Jason Myers having a big game certainly benefited everyone who followed along last week with our plays. Because we cashed that the game would have over 3.5 field goals, Seattle kicked 5, New England none, that Jason Myers would have over 1.5 field goals, cash. Over 2.5, that cashes at a big plus price. Jason Myers over 8 total points, cashes easily at a plus price. Now, we had Jason Myers 150-1 for MVP. I mean, what more does a kicker have to do? He went 5-for-5 kicking field goals. And I was tracking this. I was right here at Bar Canada with the huge party that we had. Tracking this all the way along, I never saw him get shorter than plus 280. Kenneth Walker was always had a minus in front of him by mid-second quarter and ends up winning that. And we also hit over 1.5 interceptions as Drake May threw to himself, Sam Darnold, none. That cashes. Where were our losers? Of course, Myers MVP on the pizza money was a loss. I did have Stephon Diggs over 4.5 receptions on the theory that Seattle was going to take away all the deep threats for May, and he would go underneath. They threw to the running backs more. I was surprised by that. I missed who they would target short. Diggs only ends up with 3 receptions, and we didn't have much of a shot. One of those was right at the end of the game. And speaking of Diggs, tough week for him. Brings one of the other baby mamas to the game. Cardi B dumps him. Gets arraigned on Wednesday for the charges that he choked his chef. Tough week for Diggs. And, oh, by the way, they lost the Super Bowl. And then the other loser was Jackson Smith and Jigma. Longest reception, over 29.5 yards. That did not happen. He only had 2 receptions as it was. So, overall, main bet wins, and we go 6-3 overall. So, not a bad Super Bowl. Hopefully, we can come back to you with a 70% ROI most weeks. We'll continue to do so and give you some college basketball plays today as well. From the betting perspective, it was a down year in terms of handle. both for Circa and for the state of Nevada. Still waiting for the national figures to come in. Enterprise-wide, across our six states, we were down about 8% in handle at Circa. And you have to consider that we did not have Missouri online for last Super Bowl. We just brought Missouri online December 1st, so that adds to the disappointment there. As far as the state of Nevada, last year the legal books in Nevada wrote $150 million on the Super Bowl between the Chiefs and the Eagles. This year, $133 million, so down 11% in the state of Nevada. And we take a look and say, well, why was that? And maybe it's easy to say this wasn't a compelling matchup. When you look at hotel rates on Friday night in Las Vegas, they were way down. Monday was not terrific. You know, we talked about Chiefs fatigue over the last half decade or so. Maybe the reemergence of New England so quickly was Patriots fatigue. When you look at Seattle, although they did grow a national following during the Legion of Boone days, this team really doesn't have the superstar power. You know, a journeyman quarterback who hadn't been wildly successful in Darnold. Mike McDonald, a young head coach who wasn't known when they hired him, you know, a defensive coordinator from the Ravens. JSN is a nice and upcoming star, but not the star power. So, but I think we're making excuses there. I think we need to look only to the prediction markets and how much handle they did to understand why the state regulated books were down this year. I want you to think about this. State of Nevada wrote $150 million on the Super Bowl. That's futures. You know, you open the futures as soon as this game ended last Sunday. You open the Super Bowl futures for next year, and then you're going to have division prices, conference prices, win totals, all of that. So all of that right for a full year. And that includes the preseason games and then, of course, the games through the entire season. Right? So think about what the Super Bowl right is. All futures bet on the Super Bowl, and then through the course of the season, everything bet on the Super Bowl, and then the 2 weeks in between, all the props that are up there, all the different matchups, the exact is, you know, the whole state of Nevada, $150 million. Kalshi wrote more than that on one prop. What would be the first song Bad Bunny performed at halftime? One prop. They wrote, according to just Polymarkets and Kalsheet together, close to $2 billion on the Super Bowl. So go back to this prop on Bad Bunny. You're listening to Palm Satters here on 104.3 The Score, brought to you by Circa Sports. I'm walking across the bridge at Circa on Sunday morning. It's about 10 a.m. coming in, Pacific time. And I run in, walking out towards the parking garage, to one of our bigger sports bettors here at Circa. I don't want to say his name, but let's just use his initials, KT. Interesting guy, plays in the casino as well, bets all over town, is involved with the groups of bettors. Interesting guy in baseball. I like to pick his brain on baseball. I think he has some interesting perspectives on betting baseball, and I've sat with him and watched baseball games in the book at Circa during the summer. And I said to him, KT, how are you? Happy Super Bowl Sunday. Who are you going to need today? And he said to me, Bad Bunny's first song. And I thought, he doesn't want to tell me. Right? So I blew it completely off. I never thought about it again. Interestingly enough, I was standing right here in this exact spot during the game, and this whole group was 12 people from Kenosha, Wisconsin. And all of them were involved in law enforcement in some way. A lot of them cops. Some worked for the DA. Eight of them were Bears fans and four Packers fans, and they came out and really had a good time with them, right? And it's about to be halftime, you know, turn up the volume for the concert. And, you know, this group is asking, are you going to do, you know, that America First alternative halftime? And we don't even have those channels, right? So some people walked away. A lot of people got excited about Bad Bunny and were dancing around. No thought of what KT said to me. Now I'm having lunch on Tuesday with Derek Stevens, and he's talking about KT and how much money this guy had bet on the first song from Bad Bunny at halftime on Kalshi. And he had told Derek about it. He was trying to give Derek the winner. He was trying to give him the winner. How did he know? He's friends with one of Bad Bunny's dancers. Of course, All those people knew. The musicians, the dancers, the people that produced the event had sat through the rehearsals, knew what the first song was going to be. And yet over $150 million was wagered in this on Kalshi. These are all contracts. Somebody's winning, somebody's losing, right? Two people are putting up money at a certain price and agreeing upon it. And this is a market. It's like insider trading in the stock market, except the SEC has billions and billions of dollars to enforce and prosecute it. The CFTC that's right now regulating prediction markets has a budget of $400 million, totally unequipped. This is about commodities, what they're supposed to be doing. So he knew this. He sent Derek screenshots. He had almost $350,000 bet on this Pregunto, whatever the name of the song was in Spanish. And he wins. He wins. His account now close to $1 million on Kalshi. And it just blew my mind. It was a comment that I didn't even take seriously. And then you go back and you think about Giannis Antetokounmpo and all the money that was bet on who was going to be his next team. It started in the who's going to be his next team on October 1st, on November 1st, on January 1st, and then the day after the trade deadline. This market kept being bet. I did some research on it. This was the single biggest market ever bet on Kalshi that involved a player, a single player. Before that, it had been last year's NBA MVP, which had $8 million bet on it. This Giannis had over $24 million bet on it, and of course he stayed in Milwaukee. And that price a week before the trade deadline came was only 29%. That's how they grade these. It's not plus and minus, it's percentage. 29%. It eventually closed over 80%. And then after he stays, the next day he comes out, Giannis, and says, oh, and by the way, I'm a minority owner in Kalshi. It's I say this as caveat emptor, folks. Buyer beware here on some of these markets that you're betting into that aren't specifically game-related. These results are known by people, and they're known by the people that you're making sports contracts with. Let's talk a little bit of Olympics here. I love the hockey. We're doing great, great business on the hockey here. I talked to you last week about the American women and how dominant they are. They continued. They're now into the semifinals. They'll play on Monday, which will be late morning in Chicago, against Sweden, who you could argue has been the second-best team. I know they didn't play the U.S. yet, and the U.S. women beat the Canadian women 5-0. But the U.S. women have outscored their opponents 26-1 now through five games. Just remarkable. Remember, Sweden in 06 beat the U.S. women in the semifinal round to get to the gold medal game. It was a huge upset then. U.S. women beat them, I believe, 12 years later, or 8 years, maybe it was 8 years later in 2014 in Nagano. So that we look forward to that matchup on Monday. The U.S. women now, who I recommended you bet gold before the tournament started at minus 120. You could have even have got it the day the women started at minus 135. Now minus 350. Folks, don't make that bet. You can wait, and if the U.S. meets Canada in the women's gold medal game next Thursday, the price is going to be like 170 or 180. So please do not lay 350 right now. On the men's side, Canada, no false moves. They look very dominant. I did not bet that. I could have got them at plus 140 before the tournament. I ended up betting them at minus 110 after the first game. Boy, they're going to score with all four lines. Bennington looked very comfortable in goal. They played Logan Thompson in the second game. America, who played Hellebuck in the first game, now they're going to start a Swayman from Boston today against Denmark later this morning. So it looks like we're working in all the goalies. Remember, everybody advances to knockout on the men's side, but the group winners and the highest point-earning second-place finisher in a group get the byes into this. They get the first-round byes. But I think Canada stands out as a much better team than America. Sweden, who many thought were the third best team and had the best goaltending, they won today, but not by enough. Slovakia is going to win that group. So if you had Sweden as a group winner, that did not pan out. How about France? France is a very interesting story here in the Olympics. And there's two ridiculous stories involving the country of France. First is the Paris skating. You know, the couple skating and the deal with the French judge. You can't make this stuff up. The French judge, Jezebel Dubois. Come on. This is out of a soap opera. She's this French judge, and she scored the French couple so much higher than the U.S. couple. All the judges had the U.S. couple ahead of the French couple, right? She had the U.S. couple 7th or 8th in all of her ratings, 8 points below half of the other judges in one of the competitions, and put the French couple first. And then in total, the cumulative score, the French couple won by less than 2 points. It was unfathomable. Then you go back and you look. This woman has judged this French couple from her own country 6 times in competitions. They've won gold 5 times. How can the Olympics not figure this out? They had the French judge 20 years ago. She got suspended. She put the Russian team first because she felt pressure from her own federation to make sure the Russians beat the Canadians. It's unbelievable. But the U.S., the Olympics can't figure this out. It's like college sports, men's basketball and football. I mean, if you're a Big Ten basketball official, and we'll get to that later too in the last segment and Brad Underwood's comments. If you're a Big Ten basketball official and there's a Big Ten team in the Final Four game or in the championship game, you're not working it. You're going to have officials from a different conference. Same thing in a football game. If it's an SEC team versus an ACC team, you're probably going to get a Big Ten official. It's if the Big Ten and SEC, you're going to get ACC or Big 12. Used to be Pac-12, but it doesn't really exist as a power conference anymore. That's the one thing. And then how about the biathlete? The French biathlete, Julia Simon. All right, how about this lady? She stole the credit card from one of her French biathlete teammates and a member of the French biathlete staff and used these two ladies' credit cards to ring up over $2,300 worth of online purchases. Then last year, she goes to trial in France and was found guilty and got a 3-month suspended sentence and, you know, ordered to pay restitution. Now the French Ski Federation had to take action on her once she was convicted in court. And she said in court, oh, I don't remember. I must have done it, but I have no memory of doing that. You can't write these stories. The French Ski Federation hands her a 6-month ban. She cannot compete with France for 6 months. This is back in November. Oh, but by the way, a month later, they decide we're going to suspend 5 months of it so she can compete in the Olympics. And she won 2 gold medals. She anchored their team that won in the biathlon, and she won in the individual. The teammate that she robbed also competed in the individual, finished 80th. Oh, and the French Ski Federation fined her $34,600 equivalent U.S. dollars that will be earmarked to support the training of young French biathletes. You cannot be serious. All right, you're listening to Palm Saturdays here on 104.3 The Score. We're going to go to break. And when we come back, we're going to talk to my old partner at VSiN, Amal Shaw, professional bettor, professional poker player. He's going to break down the biggest games in college basketball today. We'll talk about Indiana, Illinois tomorrow, and he'll give us his best bets. That's all right here on Palm Saturdays, 104.3 The Score.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be, with no bet fees, on 104.3 The Score.
Welcome back into Palm Saturdays. I'm Mike Palm. We're on every Saturday now, live here on The Score 104.3 from 8 to 9 a.m., taking you all the way up to Inside the Clubhouse with David Haw and Bruce Levine. Terrific show. I listened to it driving home last week. It's good. My pleasure now to welcome our guest this week. He was my co-host on a show that aired on VSiN for about 19 months in 2021 and 2022. Sitting there with him for that hour every day, 11 to 12 Pacific time, 1 to 2 Central time, it made me a better bettor. Might have made me a better person as well. So courtesy of the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline, welcome to the show for the first time, Amal Shaw. Good morning, Amal. Thanks for getting up early with us here today.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Thank you for having me on, and it's always great to be back on the airwaves with you talking betting and sports.
Yeah, we've really isolated college basketball this Saturday with the NHL in Italy with the Olympics and no NBA. So let's get right into the card today. Let's start out at 11 o'clock on ESPN. ACC battle here. Clemson comes in 10-2 in the conference against Duke, ranked number 4, 11-1. Really interesting stat here on this game. Clemson holding their opponents to just 40.4% from the field, while the Blue Devils shooting 50% from the field on the year. Maybe looking ahead, the Tigers upset at home as an 8.5-point favorite by Virginia Tech during the week, 76-66. Your thoughts on this game, and are the Blue Devils too dependent on Cameron Boozer to win the national title this year?
Yeah, I don't necessarily look at Duke as a legitimate threat to win the national title. Obviously, a team being ranked as high as they are a threat. But I still think there's just a handful of teams that can win it. I don't necessarily look at them as being one of those teams. You mentioned both these teams and their efficiency on the defensive side. Both are top 30 teams from a defensive efficiency rating standpoint. This team could be really dangerous, Clemson, in a lot of different spots. Brad Brunell's done a nice job with them so far this year. I thought that was a tough loss at home the other day against Virginia Tech. It's just a game like that you just can't drop. The other thing to be concerned with is Carter Welling got banged up a little bit in that game. Just keep an eye on his status and how he plays in this game. I don't see him on any injury reports, but he did get banged up in that game against Virginia Tech. This Duke team is tough. Now that Krzyzewski's no longer there, this team is actually likable. I actually like John Shire, and I hope he does well. Former Chicagoland superstar in high school basketball, obviously went on to a great career at Duke, and now the head coach there. So this should be an interesting one. 13.5 is a tricky number here. I would look towards probably Clemson before I play Duke in this game, but I don't have a bet on this game.
Yeah, that number up from yesterday at 12.5 on the opener to 13.5. Let's stay at 11 o'clock and flip over to the Deuce. We've got a Big 12 matchup. TCU, 15-9, 5-6 in the conference, travels to Stillwater to take on Oklahoma State, 16-8, 4-7 in the conference. The Cowboys, a 1.5 home favorite here at Gallagher-Iba.
Yeah, this is a pretty good team, 13-2 at home overall this year. Jamie Dixon's team has really struggled on the road. They haven't played a lot of road games, but they've only won one. The problem for me with TCU is their inability in terms of being consistent at the free throw line. There was a game against Kansas State that eked out a two-point win. They had about 15-17 missed free throws in that game. They're just not a great offensive team, but they find ways to stay in games. I think this Oklahoma State team has been a little bit underrated. They come in having lost a couple games in a row, back-to-back games at Arizona and Arizona State. But I think going into the Gallagher-Iba, they've had more people than they've had in the past years in attendance. They've had some pretty good offensive games in terms of being efficient on the offensive end. Keep an eye on Anthony Roy if you haven't seen him play. He's averaging almost 18 points a game for this team. I like the Cowboys in this game, Mike, at home, short home favorite here. Revenge game. They lost to TCU back on January 20th by 3 points. I think they get it done. Short number, good one here at -1.5.
An hour later at noon Central Time on ABC, maybe the game of the day, Kansas. Boy, there was talk in December this might not be a tournament team, and was this the end for Bill Self? Well, they're 9-2 in conference, 19-5 overall, ranked 9th, and just came off the huge win Monday night, beating Arizona at the Fog, rallying from a halftime deficit. And meanwhile, Iowa State, maybe in the look-ahead spot at TCU, stubbed their toe during the week. They're 8-3, 21-3. The Cyclones are a perfect 13-0 at Hilton this year. Houston Cougars will invade Ames on Monday night. Iowa State, a 6.5-point favorite here, Amal.
Yeah, this is a tricky number. I thought it was a little bit high from an Iowa State standpoint. I'd probably look towards Kansas. Peterson's going to be back in the lineup for KU. He's available. The one thing I have an issue with right now when you look at Darren Peterson, the potential number one overall pick in the draft, incredible talent. He's only played in 13 of Kansas's 24 games. But do the rest of the guys get caught ball-watching when he's on the floor? I'm not sure. And it just seems like at times Kansas is a little bit better by, subtraction of Peterson from the lineup. But we'll see today. Hilton Magic, always tough. I'll just say this. Bill Self has had a lot better teams that have gone into Ames and come out with losses against Iowa State. That's had a lot of worse teams in situations. So this will not be an easy one. Iowa State at home, always incredibly difficult. Not going to touch the number being this high. But I think I'll look for an in-game opportunity if Kansas falls behind by a large margin.
You know, Amal, speaking of Peterson, he was on the court for warm-ups Monday night. Arizona was a 1.5-point favorite. All of a sudden, he's a late scratch with, quote, flu-like symptoms. The line ballooned right before the game to 5 or 5.5, depending where you were. Do you think NBA front office people are concerned about that. They're concerned about the late scratch. They're concerned about the amount of playing time he's had this year.
Yeah, I think there's got to be some concern, but the problem is the talent will triumph at all. And by the way, I think this is ideal based on the way Silver's run the NBA. He's just load managing already.
Explain to me how Damian Lillard's in the three-point contest, but he's out for the season. I know nobody can. One thing you taught me, Amal, is about looking for some of these uglier games that maybe most bettors aren't focusing on and finding value in them. Here's a good example. We'll go to the American Conference. This game tips at 1 o'clock Central Time on ESPN Plus, if you have it. East Carolina, they're 8-16, 3-8 in the conference, taking on Rice. 11-14, 5-7. We opened this 5.5. Currently at Circa, the Rice Owls are laying 5 of them all.
There's 361 teams in Division I college basketball. East Carolina ranks 361st in three-point shooting. This team is awful. Is just horrendous offensively. When you look at them outside of Jordan Riley, they just don't have anybody else that can put the ball in the basket consistently. Riley's averaging 23 points a game. Your next leading scorer is at 13. This Rice team has been pretty good. Really good offensive rebounding team in terms of getting after the glass. They're in the top 25 nationally in terms of their offensive rebounding ability. But ECU is just terrible. They're just a terrible basketball team. And I think it's a good spot for Rice to take care of business at home against an opponent that's highly inconsistent. Just can't shoot the ball from the perimeter. To me, if you're playing a team like ECU, just go zone and make sure you can rebound out of the zone and you'll be absolutely fine.
2 o'clock Central on ABC, Kentucky, ranked 25th. 8-3 in conference against 14th-ranked Florida. Kentucky 8-1 in their last 9. The Gators 9-1 in their last 10. Florida, we opened at 11.5. It's up to 12.5. Amal, I added them earlier this week at 19-1 to win the title. Your thoughts on this game, and are the Gators good enough to cut down the nets in April?
I think the number's a little bit high here at 12.5. Look, Kentucky's had inconsistencies. If they can get going offensively, they've got a chance. The guard play for Florida's gotten better as the season has progressed, but they still have some areas for room for improving. This Florida team is not that much better than East Carolina when it comes to shooting the three-point shot. They're below 30%. I think Florida's very dangerous. I actually think they can go back-to-back. They've got the best front line in college basketball, arguably the best player defensively in Chinalu. Between Hauk and Condon, they've got an incredible offensive front here. This team is very dangerous, but today I think it's too many points. But the Gators right now, in my opinion, are probably the best team in the SEC.
Let's move to another game that you liked, Amal. This is also at 2 o'clock Central Time on TNT or True. This is a Big East matchup, and boy, is the Big East down this year. Marquette, Shaka Smart, 9-16, 4-10. They're going to Cincinnati to take on Xavier, Richard Pitino's first year. Musketeers are 12-12, a half game ahead of Marquette in conference play at 4-9. Xavier, a 2.5-point home favorite here, Amal.
Yeah, Shaka Smart's team's had an absolute bagel on the road this year. They're 0-9 in road games. Look, Musketeers haven't had a great year under Richard Pitino. Played well against St. John's in that loss recently. But I think this is one where they get it done at home, short number against a Marquette team that's just been completely it's at times non-competitive and blown many leads on the road. I think this is a great opportunity if you are Richard Pitino and company at home. Short number here. I think they get it done pretty comfortably.
You're listening to Palm Saturdays here on 104.3 The Score. We're joined by Amal Shaw, professional sports bettor, poker player, entrepreneur. Purdue, ranked 13th. 20-4, 10-3 in conference, will be at Carver Hawkeye today to take on Iowa, 18-6, 8-5. These teams met, Amal, January 14th at Mackey. Purdue was a 10.5-point favorite. They won but did not cover, 79-72. Iowa led 34-31 at the half. But the Boilermakers outscored the Hawkeyes 32-22 in the paint and 19-6 from the charity stripes. Iowa lost 77-70 at Maryland on Wednesday. This game tips at 4 o'clock on Fox. Purdue, we opened 1.5. They now sit as a 2-point road favorite, Amal.
Yeah, I don't have an issue with Purdue being the favorite here, and I think they're rightfully so the favorite in this particular spot. I look at this Iowa team. They had a good road win at Indiana. But overall, they benefited from the weaker part of the schedule in the Big Ten. You know, you look at they had that loss against Maryland the other night. You just can't lose to the Terrapins based on the way their season has gone so far. I think Purdue gets it done despite the fact that they're on the road here. I would take Purdue minus 2.5. Not the type of game I usually lay points on the road with, but if you're betting it, I would look at Purdue.
5:30 Central on ESPN. Texas Tech goes to Arizona. The Red Raiders, 8-3 in conference. Arizona was 23-0 before the loss at the Fog on Monday night. This game was 11.5, now down to 9.5 here. My problem with Arizona, I love this team, Amal. It's Tommy Lloyd. Halftime, they're up 4 at Kansas on Monday. Here's what Bill Self said. That's the best team we've seen all year. We're very fortunate to only be down by 4. I'm going to have to come up with something to keep us in the game. Tommy Lloyd said, it's a great environment. We need to keep playing to our strength. After the game, Lloyd said, well, we knew we were going to lose eventually. If Arizona wins it all this year, if Arizona makes the Final Four, Amal, it will be in spite of Tommy Boy Lloyd.
I'll tell you something. Arizona's got a ton of talent. They're always tough at the McHale Center. They have been going back decades with Lute Olson. This number's a little bit high. This Texas Tech team is really good. Grant McCaslin's a really good coach. Toppin's had a very good season for this team. And, you know, a lot of people don't talk about Christian Anderson, but you'll see his name in the first round of the NBA draft. Between the two of them, they're averaging more than 40 points a game. They've got to play big, and they've got to play well if they're going to have a chance to be competitive in this game. I would take Tech in the points here, but it wouldn't be surprised if they get into a little bit of a shooting funk, because this Arizona team on the glass is just incredible. Top 15 in offensive rebounding, number 2 in the nation in rebounding. That's where they make their hay, is not giving teams second chance opportunities and then getting them themselves. So, and I think one thing that's overlooked with Arizona, we think about what they do offensively and how well they score, Mike, but defensively, this is a top 5 team from a defensive rating standpoint.
Amal, let's close with this one, a game that many folks in Chicago are interested in. Tomorrow, Indiana comes to Champaign to take on Illinois. Illinois, tough luck losers the last two in overtime at Michigan State, and then an overtime loss to Wisconsin during the week as well. We'll talk in the last segment about Brian Underwood's thoughts on the Big Ten officiating. Hoosiers played pretty well recently, 5-1 in their last 8. I think I saw 8.5 or 9 as a number as a look ahead in this game. Tomorrow morning, Amal, Indiana at Illinois.
Yeah, no Stojakovic potentially for this one. He's banged up with an ankle injury. We'll see if he's able to go. You mentioned the Illini having 2 straight losses, both tough losses at the Breslin Center in overtime, and then losing at home against Wisconsin in overtime. I think they bounce back in a big way here. Indiana's played well so far this year, but to me, this is going to be a tougher spot for them. This is one where I think Illinois just kind of gets things back on track after having lost 2 in a row. They find a way in Champaign and win this game pretty handily.
Amal, before you go, can you clear up a question for us? Daniil Medvedev says the head balls they're using on the men's tour are square. They are not round. Is he correct?
That would be incorrect. You know what? The problem in tennis is, outside of Alcaraz and Sinner, everybody else has got an excuse when they lose.
That's Amal Shaw, everyone, my friend, tremendous college basketball better, best tennis better I know, and we appreciate Amal, you taking the time to join us here on Palm Saturdays on 104.3 The Score. When we come back, we're going to talk about Brad Underwood and his contentions about Big Ten officiating. I think I can answer his question that he asked following the loss to Wisconsin this week.
We're back with more Palm Saturdays, starring Circa's Vice President of Operations, Mike Palm, live from Bar Canada at the D from downtown Las Vegas. Presented by Circa Sports. Sports betting the way it should be, with no bet fees, on 104.3 The Score.
That's right, we're live on The Score every Saturday morning, 8 to 9, and we're taking you right up to inside the clubhouse. David Hall will be there at The Score Studios in Chicago, and poor Bruce Levine, he's got the difficult task of being in Arizona for spring training. I envy him a little bit. We'll get down there before it's all said and done. I mentioned Brad Underwood, very frustrated with the officiating at the loss at East Lansing over the weekend, and even more frustrated after the home loss to Wisconsin. Let's go to that sound.
We'll send the missed out-of-bounds play in the first play of the overtime. That's egregious, right? I mean, it's egregious. We will definitely send in the 10-second call that happens, I mean, he's 5 feet from getting across half court, and there's 10-second call, and we got guys that miss that, and they're making, I mean, it's just, you know, I don't know. I don't know what to do with it. I don't know. I'm done talking to people. I don't get call. I'm done. I'm frustrated as heck. I'm very frustrated. And because it changes so much from game to game. We had a guy tonight we haven't had in 2 years. 2 years. Do a league game in 2 years.
The officiating crew was DJ Carstensen, James Breedy, and Will Howard. Will Howard is the guy that Brad Underwood was referring to. He was on him from the very beginning of the game. And so the question is, how could we have a guy do this game between two very good teams? So it's a premier matchup midweek in the Big Ten that hasn't done a league game in 2 years. I'm going to give you the backstory. I'm going to answer the question why, and this kind of flew under the radar. Terry Weimer was the longtime coordinator of officials for both the big basketball officials for both the Big Ten and the Mountain West conferences. He died suddenly on October 18th. And so he was replaced by Terry Oglesby. Now, if you're a big college basketball fan, you probably know who Terry Oglesby is. He's worked a lot of Final Fours. He's a well-respected official. But now this is his first time being thrust into this role as a league coordinator. What does that mean? That means you recruit the officials, you train the officials, you grade the officials in conjunction with the league, and you hold them accountable to standards. And you also assign the officials to every game. Well, from people that I know that work in this business, and I was, you know, I worked college baseball and college softball in my day. I had one time thought about being a Major League Baseball umpire, umpired almost every high school sport. I know a few people in the industry. You know, Oglesby have some beefs with some of the longtime Big Ten officials that he's worked with. And I was told before the turn of the year, as Oglesby works into this schedule, watch him replace some of these guys he doesn't like. You're going to see new folks working Big Ten basketball games that you haven't seen before or that you hadn't seen in a while. Well, that's what happened in Champaign this week. Look for this now. We'll start to see the patterns of the guys he didn't like, and you're going to see new guys moved in. If you can get these officiating assignments ahead of time, perhaps that will factor into your handicapping of games. Speaking of coaches' rants, well, we got one coming up today. I can't wait for it. A game I didn't talk to them all about. UCLA and Mick Cronin. They're in Ann Arbor taking on the second-ranked Wolverines. Michigan probably going to move to number one if they win this game because of the Arizona loss. This game is tipping at 11:45 Central Time. That's 9:45 Pacific. So the UCL players' body clock, this game is tipping at 9:45. Have you listened to Little Napoleon, or Napoleon Dynamite as I call him, Mick Cronin, at every single post-game conference complains about the Big Ten scheduling? We have to go play Rutgers and Penn State. It's 10 below zero. Then we got a five-hour bus ride. These teams come out here at UCLA. The trip is UCLA-USC. It's 72 degrees, and it's a nice little vacation for them, and they're in a great mood. And we have to go to the miserable East. We have to fly 6 hours, then get on a bus, and the scheduling. It's all he does is talk about the scheduling and how, you know. Get back your $4.5 million you're making at UCLA, Mick, or suck it up. Once a year is enough. He's got to have the speech written already for today. He absolutely has the speech ready to complain. Win, lose close, lose big. You're going to hear from Mick Cronin today. Mark it. We'll probably play it next week on the show. Let's transition to baseball. Did you see the Nick Castellanos story? The Phillies released him. Last year, 5-year, $100 million deal, still $20 million left on the contract. They released him. They would rather eat the $20 million than have Nick Castellanos on their roster this year. It's a little surprising. Now all the stories come out. It's like he and Rob Thompson, the manager, he had no respect for Rob Thompson. Story is because Rob Thompson wasn't a big league player, didn't like the hitting coach, and it all came to a boil in July of last year in a game in Miami where Castellanos is from. He had over 100, according to him, over 100 friends and family at the game, and Thompson removed him in the seventh inning for a defensive replacement. He berated Thompson. Then he went and he got beer and brought beer into the dugout and was drinking during the eighth and ninth innings. And then went at Thompson again. He had to be restrained by his teammates. Story there is after that, none of the teammates backed him. They tried to trade him from that point on. Couldn't get anything for him. And so now they release him. It's amazing stories that keep coming out. Stories that you can't believe are true, but they really are. And this all makes a lot of sense now once they released him. I like to follow executive polls. I really do, in all the major sports. I like player polls. I find very interesting. Coaching polls I find very interesting, most sometimes bettable. Executive polls, interesting and bettable. They did a poll every week of the general manager slash presidents, the chief executive, football operations executives from all 32 NFL teams. Well, the ones that were no longer involved in the playoffs. And they asked to pick the winner of the game. No point spread. Every single game of the playoffs, every single game they picked the winner correctly. Pretty impressive, huh? 13-0. Straight up. Not against the spread, but still. That's a 13-0 parlay, or roll it over every week. So they did a recent executive poll of Major League Baseball's 30 executives, and they asked some very interesting questions. Things to note here. Things to note. Jot them down. I'll start next week doing my division previews. We'll take a little block in the show each week, preview a different division. We'll start with the NL Central next week. Most improved team, Major League Baseball executives. In the National League, New York Mets. Very interesting. Very, very interesting. In the American League, Baltimore Orioles. These teams are both about 8-1 to win the pennant. 8-1. But in the Mets' case, they're the second choice in the National League. The Dodgers are +110 or whatever. I mean, +220 to win it, +110 to win it. In the Orioles' case, they're 8-1 or 8.5-1. They're the sixth choice of the American League. American League is wide open. By the way, just coming off the wires here, Castellanos was not out of work long. The San Diego Padres just signed him. So you heard it here first. Castellanos and his six-pack heading to Petco Park. All right, best unrestricted free agent acquisition. Pete Alonso, Orioles, 5 years, $155 million. More interesting to me, worst free agent acquisition, the Blue Jays, Dylan Cease. I had to do a double take when I read this, the length of this contract. They paid him $210 million over 7 years. I said, I remember Cease coming up with the White Sox. I used to call him D. Cease on VSiN. Am I wrong? Is the guy really like 27? Am I missing a few years here? No, he's 30. He's 30, and they're giving him 210. There's several points in his career I thought he was done. Mind-boggling to me. Best trade. This was an interesting one. The Mariners acquiring Brandon Donovan from the Cardinals was voted as the best trade, giving the Mariners Seattle much more defensive versatility. Speaking of the Cardinals, and this will be part of my preview, I cannot believe how bad this team is. I mean, growing up a Cubs fan from Dubuque, Iowa, I mean, the Cardinals, such a well-run organization. My dad would take us to St. Louis to see the Cubs play a four-game series every year and stay at the hotel right across the street from Busch Stadium. We'd get to run in. I mean, I'm little now. Dave Kingman in the hotel lobby. Fergie Jenkins, right? I mean, this was a great trip. We loved it. A lot of stuff for kids to do in St. Louis. Go to the Arch and Knott's Berry Farm and all that. Least improved team. Major League Baseball executives. St. Louis Cardinals. They're 45-1 to win the NL Central. I never thought I'd live for that day. 45-1. Least improved in the AL. I would go all in before I even knew the results. It's the Twins. The poll ads thinking they were going to sell the team decimated it. If you become a regular listener of the show, you'll hear me talk about the poll ads quite a bit in Minneapolis. And the least recognizable team, this for me used to be the White Sox. You didn't recognize the roster. It's now the Rockies. So signs of improvement on the South Side, I guess. People don't even know who these players on the Rockies are. So make notes of these things as we go through and we get our preseason bets in Major League Baseball and we put our futures in. Of course, we'll add to art portfolios along the way. It's a fun day for me. I'll say this in closing. I've really enjoyed back I came out of Notre Dame. I was in the seminary program there for 2 years. I ended up, no, I want to have a family. And 20 years later, I had my first child. But when I went back to Iowa and I taught in a Catholic school in Boone, Iowa, and I coached all the sports. And I was living in the rectory. I was making $16,800 a year in the mid-90s. And I could barely afford to write the check to Sally Mae every month. But I loved it. It was a great experience. And if I could afford to do it now, I would probably go back and teach. Unfortunately, that's not the case. But as my kids have gotten older and gotten more into sports, I've had the ability to coach them. So today is a really fun day for me. I have 5 games today. My son, who is on this all-star team that I'm helping coach, I'm not the main coach, but helping coach, 10 and under. They won their last tournament on Martin Luther King weekend, and now they have another one here in Las Vegas on President's weekend. They're a very good team. He's the first-line left wing. They play San Jose team this morning at 8:45 a.m. Now, my stepdaughter is in third grade at Doral. It's a magnet school, Saddle. But she practices with the fourth and fifth grade team because she's really good. So I coach the second and third grade co-ed team that she's on. And I'm the assistant on the fourth and fifth grade girls team. We've got a game at noon with fourth and fifth, a game at one with second and third, a game at three with second and third, and then back to hockey where we play Juno at 4:45 this afternoon. Reminder, Fat Tuesday, Mardi Gras on Tuesday. What are you giving up for Lent? You heard it first here on Palm Saturdays. 104-3 the score. We'll see everybody next Saturday morning. Stay tuned for Inside the Clubhouse. David Haw and Bruce Levine.